Don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
4:36 in the morning. Good morning, Mr. Dave Schwann. Getting settled in the studio. The transfer of power has happened once again.
And good morning to you, sir.
What's going on, buddy?
Oh, I'll tell you. We got spoiled.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Weather-wise,
I know there's conflicting thoughts on what today's weather is going to be. You know, Skillingsand, one thing. Our weather center has another perspective on it. But I'm hoping it'll be still a pleasant day today.
It should be. My forecast, which I have here,
yes,
hot off the press,
uh-huh,
this isn't bad. Well, it's a little cooler than what it was going to be, what we've had the last couple of days, I should say. Sunny today, a high near 50 rather than 70
yeah,
for the middle of February.
Yeah.
And tomorrow, we do have a chance of rain, cloudy, but a high of near 61. So, hey, we'll take it. We'll
look
take
at that. It's February 19th.
Later in the week, I understand we're going to get back to what you would consider a normal February.
Yeah.
But
I just came from Southern California, where the weather was pretty similar today, but
yeah,
the torrential downpours were quite horrible. I was telling the Roger and Lisa earlier in the show that I had two flights canceled, you know, because of the flooding in the airports. I mean, it's
oh, is that
bad.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was flooding in my hotel room, like coming in through the windows because
wow,
the wind was so bad. It literally looked like, Dave, that there was buckets of water being dumped outside the window. It was poor. I've never seen anything like that in my entire life.
I've stayed in rooms like that, but it wasn't raining.
Yeah. Oh, where the water was coming in. Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty wild. Yeah. It was pretty wild.
Well, let's see. I guess we'll have to get you a new room.
Mm-hmm. But but they couldn't because most of the rooms were flooding like
flooding
that.
Flooding anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that something?
So I grabbed a little Manhattan after hanging out with my clients all night. Grabbed
would
one.
Have had more than
I had a little
one.
Nightcap. I had a little nightcap that I didn't really worry about the water at that point. So it's okay. You know, I was just thinking to myself, I'm really how grateful I am that I get to work with Roger overnight, and I get to hang out with Dave Schwann as we close out the show. It's a
good way to start the morning.
You guys
for
are
me.
Awesome. No, I love spending time with you guys. So this one of the history points of this week. You know, it's the 180th anniversary of the city of Chicago.
Okay, well, it will be March 2nd.
March 2nd, yeah,
yeah,
it's coming up,
which will be next week, actually.
Yeah, so that's coming up next week. 1854, the Republican Party formally organized nationally just north of us in Wisconsin.
Ripon, Wisconsin. That's
Ripon,
correct.
Ripon, Wisconsin, yep.
Yep.
Commonly called the GOP for Grand Old
Grand
Party.
Grand Old Party.
Yep, yep. It emerged in 1854 to combat the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which threatened to extend slavery into the territories and to promote a more vigorous modernization of the economy. So with its election of Abraham Lincoln in 1860, first major Republican candidate, and its success in guiding the Union to victory in abolishing slavery, the Republican Party was based on businessmen, small business owners, professionals, factory workers, farmers, and African Americans. It was pro-business, supporting banks, the gold standard, railroads, and tariffs to protect industrialized workers and industry. That was the original, you know.
It was the original premise of the party. That's right. And Lincoln, of course, emerged as a leader in the late 1850s with his debates with Stephen A. Douglas when he was running for U.S. Senate.
That's right.
And Douglas was a Democrat and was saying that if the Kansas-Nebraska Act wants to proceed, let them proceed. But that's, you know, it culminated in Lincoln's what's called the House Divided speech that he gave in Springfield. A house divided against itself cannot stand. The nation cannot endure half slave and half free.
Wow. Look at that. Right off the top of your head, young man. That is fantastic.
And I've only had one cup of coffee.
One cup of coffee. Well, listen to this. So in 1861.
Well, I'm a Lincoln nerd. You know
you
that.
You are a Lincoln nerd. Absolutely. Well, and you know that when he took office in 1861, that he kind of had a sneak into Washington,
D.C. Not kind of.
He did.
He
I
did.
Mean, yeah.
They brought him under the cover of night.
Well, there was rumors that he was going to be assassinated in Baltimore. And, you know, many reps from the southern states made it clear that secession was going to be inevitable. So on
Which it was.
So on February 23rd, 1861, he arrived in Washington And for the remainder of his presidency, Lincoln's many critics would hound him for the seemingly cowardly act of sneaking through Baltimore at night in disguise. He was in disguise, sacrificing his honor.
I think that had more to do with
safety.
His guards than him being, afraid.
Yeah.
They were protecting him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. 1896, Dave, we were the capital of candy in the country.
We would have been.
We really were.
All the candy that has been made, continues to be made here, I guess we would have been.
Yeah. And I'm hoping to hear that Frango Mint, now that it's been purchased by Garrett Popcorn, that it's actually going to be brought back to Chicago for production. It's going to be owned by a Chicago company, but I would hope to hear that it's going to be produced here as well. But in 1896, Chicago's Tootsie Roll was introduced by Leo Hirschfield.
Mm-hmm.
I can enjoy a Tootsie Roll once in a while. You know when I get it? I get it when they pass it out.
I can't eat them anymore.
No?
Well, not because I don't like them, but because of the my dental work.
No. Gotcha. That makes sense. That makes sense. But who passes them out? Is it the Knights of Columbus? The Pats that passes out the Tootsie Roll when they collect, right, Lise? Yeah.
Knights of Columbus, Lions Club,
yeah.
Kiwanis.
Yeah. That's the only time I eat them.
Yeah.
I think. That's the only time I eat them. 1905, the Rotary Club International was formed by four men in Chicago. Rotary International is an international service organization whose stated purpose is to bring together business and professional leaders in order to provide humanitarian services, encouraging high ethical standards in all vocations, and build goodwill and peace throughout the world. There are almost 35,000 clubs nationwide and 1.2 million members.
Wow.
Rotary Club. Yeah.
Yeah.
Been around a long time.
Started here.
That's right. Let's see here. Your show shows with Sid Caesar, 1950, premiered on NBC with probably the most amazing writing cast in the history of television.
Yeah. Go ahead. Read the names.
Mel Brooks, Neil Simon, Carl Reiner, and Sid Caesar himself.
Wow. Yeah.
Pretty wild. 1972, President Nixon made his historic week-long visit to China.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. That was, that was, of course, before cable news and, a 24-hour news cycle, more or less. But that was one of those things where primetime network TV interrupted their regular schedule to bring us Nixon in China,
right,
as it were.
That's right. I skipped a few things here. We've got, it was also the anniversary of the invention of the aspirin. Let's listen to a classic commercial.
Take Bufferin. Only Bufferin contains dialminate, which makes it relieve pain twice as fast as aspirin. Now, aspirin is the one indispensable ingredient in all leading pain relievers, including other compounds. Aspirin's a fine pain reliever, but without an acid, it's comparatively slow getting into the bloodstream to relieve pain. It's acid and often causes upset stomach. Only Bufferin adds to aspirin an exclusive compound of two antacids called dialminate. These special ingredients speed the pain reliever into the bloodstream twice as fast. Out goes the pain without upset stomach. So don't settle for any remedy that doesn't contain dialminate. To get relief from the pain of a headache, twice as fast, take Bufferin.
It's a lot of music that is disturbing, and if you have a headache, you don't want to hear it.
And you don't want to hear the echo chamber either.
No, you don't. You don't. You don't. It was also the anniversary of the invention of the hula hoop. Here is a classic spot from the hula hoop.
Here comes the Shoop Shoop Hula Hoop and the Frisbee family of flying fun. Now, seven different Frisbees, seven ways to discover the wonderful world of Frisbee flight. Frisbee, everybody's idea of a good time. Get in on the fun with the Shoop Shoop Hula Hoop, the hoop with the sound. For more tricks, more fun, get the Hoop of Champions. Frisbee and Hula Hoop, sold separately from Whammo.
Whammo. Is that the classic toy brand you remember as a kid?
Yes, it is. Whammo, and I had a hula hoop.
See? Look at that.
I couldn't use it to save my life. I just couldn't do it. But I did. That was a big thing. I remember several kids in the neighborhood. Some of the older kids in the neighborhood were able to really master it, but not me.
My daughter's got it down.
Oh, she
has it down, absolutely.
Oh, everything old is new again.
That's
so
right.
Your daughter has a hula hoop.
That's right, absolutely.
Wow.
Yep.
Good
yep.
for her.
They still sell those, absolutely. Kitty A Go Go. Do you remember that show?
Kitty Agogo.
It was the late 1950s, so...
No, that was not... I was a little bit too young, maybe, for that one.
It was a teen dance program for the tweener set where kids up to the age of 12 could dance like their big brothers and sisters. And let's see here. It was Jack Mulqueen.
The Mulqueens, the family. Yeah, I know them. Yeah, yeah.
They produced this show. And his wife, Elaine, played a big part in this show as well. Let's take a little listen to a little bit of Kitty Ago. By the way, it did air on WGN in the mid-1960s. I think it was on another network. I think it was on ABC or the WLS station here. WBKB is what it was on. And so Kitty Agogo moved to WGN for like 1 year. Let's take a little listen.
Kitty Agogo, the only show of its kind across the country.
So it's kind of like an American Bandstand in Chicago. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the Mulqueen family having a program in the 60s.
Yeah.
Though.
I think it was that show.
It might have been a carryover or, you know, another incarnation of it or something. The name doesn't quite ring with me.
It's kind of sad that there really isn't any music shows to speak of outside of like America's Got Talent. Some of those shows, there's not like a, you know, we had American Bandstand. We had MTV, by the way. Hello. Like MTV in the 80s, you would see every music video. You would see biographies on artists.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like that anymore.
No.
Like, where do you see this stuff?
I don't know.
It's online, I guess.
Ask your kids. The kids will know.
Yeah, there's Snapchat is where they're finding all this stuff. Lise, where do you find new music? Where do you discover
online?
New music?
Yeah.
I guess online
a lot.
Everything's online. Everything.
You know, there's like Pitchfork is like a big independent music website.
Does that have anything to do with the Pitchfork Music Festival here?
Yes, it does.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm... Not as old as you
think
I am.
Damn hip. You are edgy, she says. But you know what? It's like we had record stores, too. You would go and listen to records.
Oh, don't get me started on
record
stores. You
go flip through albums and look at their new release wall and put on a
pair of
headphones.
Oh, Dave, you're
going to
make me cry, man.
We were talking about vinyl earlier, and I wanted to jump on and say I have the La La Land vinyl.
Oh, that's cool.
I just
bought it.
Yep.
The soundtrack for La La Land?
Yeah, and it's like a blue LP, and then there's a signed like cover signed by Justin Horowitz, the guy that did the music.
That's neat. I'm glad to hear that.
I have two record players in my parents' house. We still play our records.
But you know what? That was art. When you think about the record album cover, that was art. I mean, where do you see that now? I mean, no one's really buying CDs anymore, so you're going online and... on iTunes and seeing a little thumbnail of what that art used to be.
Yeah. Why do you think they made frames to fit album covers?
Yeah, that's
And a friend of mine, a friend of mine gave me a book some years back for Christmas about some of the 100 greatest album covers of all time, and you know, just it's just enjoyable to just thumb through that. But you're absolutely right, Dave. It was art, and it was meant to catch your eye when you were thumbing through records in the record bin at a store.
So I spent about 10 years in the music business, and I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but it was on the retail side. But you know, we promoted. I lived in Minneapolis and New York, which are two big music hubs, and worked for two of the largest companies. And I was in charge of marketing of all these albums and stuff, but I was also in charge of all these in-store appearances. So, you know, Aerosmith, Van Halen. My last one I did when I was in charge of when I was in New York was Mariah Carey Lit the Tree in Rockefeller Center when her first album came out, her Christmas album. And then I had to arrange for a sleigh to take her over to the Coconut store that was on 51st and 6th next to Radio City Music Hall. And I remember getting, and I still have all this stuff. I have so much stuff. The paperwork on, you know, what she wanted as far as water and food and sweets and all this other stuff. And it was pretty demanding. And then when I actually met her, and I know it might be a little bit diva-ish now, but And when I actually met her and I said, you know, I'm sorry, we don't, you know, I've got this and I've got this, but I couldn't find this. She goes, oh, honey, that's fine. Whatever you got is fine by me. And she was supposed to stay for 2 hours and sign autographs. And it was, by that time, it was about 9:30 at night, so till 11:30. And there was a line that must have gone 8 city blocks to come meet her. And she stayed till about 4:45 that morning.
Oh, really?
And signed every last autograph. She continued to stay.
Oh, that was great.
Took some bathroom breaks and so forth. So it's not always about what you hear. But I will tell you, when records, you know, we would get cutouts. You know, we would get samples of the albums with a little cut in the top of them. But they also used to hand out record flats. So for a new album, you'd get about 30 or 40 flats, which were just a one-sided print of the cover of the album. And that's what you would do your display work with in the store. And I have probably, I might have a couple hundred of these that are all autographed by the bands that, you know, because we would go to record parties 3 days a week. I mean, it was a big deal back then. But those record flats are worth a lot of money because that was literally like reprinted artwork.
Don't you have some of those framed?
I did. Yeah, some of them I did. Yeah, yeah. I don't have them up, but I thought I saw those
around your
house. Yeah, yeah. So cool stuff. Yeah, cool stuff. All right, here's another one. S.S. Kresge, the founder of the company that would become Kmart, met variety store Frank Winfield Woolworth while he was working as a traveling salesman and selling to all 19 of Woolworth's stores at the time. In 1897, Kresge invested $8,000, which today would be equivalent to almost $250,000. So $8,000. Saved from his job and opened up Kmart, and he incorporated the company in 1912 with 85 stores. During World War I, he experimented with raising the limit on prices in his stores to a dollar. By 1924, he was worth approximately $374 million. This is S.S. Kresge. Because remember, there was S.S. Kresge stores as well.
Oh, sure. I remember the Kresge stores.
So the Kresge stores were in malls. And right. Then the Kmarts were
strips. The Kmarts were independent. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was worth, by 1924, $375 million. Today, equivalent to $5.2 billion.
Wow.
So he was one of the, you know, talking about Montgomery Ward and Sears Roebuck and everybody else. This guy really, you know, so he had 597 stores operating in 1929. I'm trying to think what we have today, because right now, Kmart and Sears are in pretty tough shape.
Yes, they are.
Most analysts do not believe that they have cash to really operate after selling. They sold Craftsman. They just sold Craftsman and Kenmore and everything
else. They sold Craftsman for a lot of money.
$1 billion. But listen to this. Sears and Kmart is worth now, once they sold Craftsman, only $900 million.
That's all.
Yeah. And they're losing several hundred million a quarter. Yeah. That means it's not going to.
That's
they own a lot of real estate, yeah. But we'll have to see what happens.
That is sad to hear.
It is sad to hear. All right. It is 4:54. We'll be right back with Walter Jacobs.